Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome in, everybody, to the Flagship Podcast. It is Super Bowl week. Super Bowl week. Full disclosure, we are recording on what used to be known as the National Signing Day. Now it's just the secondary signing day compared to the December signing period when Texas loaded up on 30 newcomers who are going to take the baton and try to build on what the Longhorns did in 2023, a magical run, 12-2 season to their first ever college football playoff berth. Eric, we got to talk to Steve Sarkisian today, and I think the thing that excited most of Longhorn Nation was Sarkisian saying he's obsessed with having the same kind of success he had in 2023 and expanding on it, winning a national championship. And if he wins one, he's going to want two, and that's going to lead us into some conversation today about expectations for the Longhorns. But give me your thoughts on Steve Sarkisian today, our first real availability with him since the Sugar Bowl, right?
That is correct, Chip. First off, what is going on, my man? It's kind of odd. You know, I won't wax poetically too long. But yeah, man, it is odd. The national signing day, what used to be such a, for the majority of our lifetimes, right? I mean, you know,
first Wednesday in February,
a huge day. And this is the first one that I've been, you know, here on 40 acres. And it's just like, oh, well, it's just another day. Even Sark mentioned it. He's just like, yeah, it's pretty odd. You know, this is what it is, but I'll have some updates for you. It felt like a bye week press conference, Chip, almost. So that certainly was unique. But yeah, to your point, Steve Sarkisian did mention, as he said, he is obsessed with wanting to bring success to the 40 acres of this Texas program. And he's mentioned this line many times that, you know, when he got another head coaching job, he didn't want to just be a head coach to be a head coach, right? Wanted to be a head coach to be great. I'm sure part of that stems from his time being under Nick Saban. But that certainly is an encouraging sign. But also, I mean, Chip, this is also, in my mind, not necessarily anything new. This is a guy who Steve Sarkisian, you know, hasn't been shy about saying he didn't really have any hobbies outside of football. You know, he's not looking to do anything else in his off time. You know, he's a guy who, you know, probably spends his bye week, you know, all right, checking out a couple football games, right? He likes to go out to the high school games, or when he's on vacation, you know, go visit his NFL friends, right? And see what they're doing. So not too much of a surprise that this guy is obsessed, probably healthily, you know, for him, with the process and the task. And Chip, I thought this line stood out to me. You know, again, there's plenty of things we'll get into, so I'll throw a couple of things that stood out to me. One, him talking about the fact that his team has really been receptive to the process, right? And understand the process starts now. It doesn't start in August. It doesn't even start, you know, Big 12 media days or summer. It starts in February. And that's the type of attitude, Chip, that it's going to take. So, I mean, how often do we talk about culture, right? That, to me, is an encouraging sign if you're a Texas fan that the culture is permeating throughout this program, and the guys who are back are eager to pick up the baton, where some of the guys who are no longer at the program have left off. So that one other thing, Chip, that I'd love to get your thoughts on that definitely stood out to me, Steve Sarkisian mentioned, the fact that he said they're pretty much the entirety of his coaching staff had people trying to get after him this year or this offseason, right? And that to me is super interesting, you know, to bring back Chip, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I've seen this on Twitter, but I haven't done the research yet. This is Pete Kwiatkowski being in his fourth year. This is the longest stint in what, over 20 years as far as a defensive coordinator. Going back, I wish I had the name. If you can remember off the top of your head, it was DCing Texas 99-03. That's what I saw on Twitter as the name of the last defensive coordinator who was here for that long. So to have that kind of continuity among your coaching staff, concerns
Bull Reese, Carl Reese.
There you go. Yep. So to have that kind of continuity amongst your coaching staff, considering the fact that, you know, again, they had options and Sark said, hey, I embrace it. It's a good problem to have. That's a byproduct of winning. So those two things stood out to me. And again, it just was more like a bi-week press conference, but certainly some good nuggets that came out of today's session. Yes, sir.
Well, the thing that, you know, Texas fans, they got into, well, the whole program got into a vicious cycle. You never want to be the program that is constantly calling for coaches to be fired, because then you're Auburn, and Auburn has had a historical reputation for being a really tough place to be a coach because the expectations are unwieldy and you don't know who's really calling the shots. And for a while, Texas was in that same situation after Mack Brown left after the 2013 season. It was a lack of alignment and leadership in the university. You had Steve Patterson, who was a complete failure as an athletic director, fired 22 months into a 7-year contract. You had an interim athletic director, Mike Perrin, who was 70, and God bless him, a great attorney in Houston, but ended up hiring Tom Herman as the football coach. And then he, you know, gives way to Chris Del Conte, and that's when the alignment started to happen with new president Jay Hartzell and Regents chairman Kevin Eltife. You got to have that alignment. It's part of the reason I think A&M is going through a bunch of turbulence right now, because you got to have that. You got to have alignment from the top of the university down, and everybody can feel it. It's like we talk about here on the Flagship Podcast, when the parents are unhappy, the kids feel it. And when the program doesn't have alignment, the players feel it. When there is alignment and culture is being built and it's being embraced by everyone from the president to the athletic director to the coach, the players feel it and feel like, okay, I'm investing in something really worthwhile here. And then they see the results in a year like 2023. And then the players are really, hopefully, if you're Steve Sarkisian, carrying that mantle about the culture. This is how we do it. This is how things are done. And then when you're bringing in guys from Alabama and other, Alabama, they also have an idea of how things are done. They can add to it. That's great. And Texas has had a steady pipeline of Alabama players since Steve Sarkisian came from Alabama to become the head coach in 2021. And the latest, Isaiah Bond, the speed receiver, Amari Nyblack, the, you know, stretch the field tight end, and Kendrick Blackshire, the linebacker who Steve Sarkisian mentioned today as a really key pickup with the, with Jalen Ford moving on to the NFL. So, I think that continuity is huge. There's no doubt about it. When you have continuity, obviously Steve Sarkisian is going to be calling the offensive plays. You've got Pete Kwiatkowski, you know, entering his fourth season, and Jeff Banks, who is so valuable as a special teams coordinator, tight ends coach, recruiter. When you have that kind of continuity, that's big time. And it was interesting too that Steve Sarkisian mentioned today about the promotion of Brandon Harris to GM of the football operations, basically the personnel department, replacing Billy Glasscock. And and Billy Glasscock left to go to Ole Miss and work for Lane Kiffin. And I'm told that this was a move that Steve Sarkisian helped facilitate, in part because he wanted Brandon Harris to ascend and was happy to help Billy Glasscock move on to help Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. So this, again, you're Brandon Harris ascends. He's been a part of the program, a vital part of the program, and everyone under Brandon Harris has been in the program. Steve Sarkisian's not going out and having to bring in new, you know, player personnel people. He's elevating from within, more continuity, more familiarity. Brandon Harris knows what Steve Sarkisian's looking for. Steve Sarkisian likes what Brandon Harris helps find in the, you know, from a player development, recruiting, evaluation standpoint. So Steve Sarkisian hasn't made very many sideways steps in his off seasons since arriving in 2021. And, you know, you wrote about the defensive tackle position that Steve Sarkisian mentioned, because one of the newcomers signed in this 30-member 2024 class is Tia Savea, a veteran defensive tackle who spent the last two seasons at Arizona in a defense coordinated by Johnny Nansen, who's now the new co-defensive coordinator and linebackers coach, Eric.
Yeah, Chip, definitely want to come back to the defensive tackle spot. And you talk about some of the newcomers. You talked about Henry Blackshire, Amari Nye Black, and others. You know, obviously, Tia Savea, a big part of it. Chip, I want to ask you one thing. This is a genuine inquiry on my part. You've obviously, you know, been around this program a long time. You talked about very few missteps, if any, since Steve Sarkisian has arrived at Texas. What I find really interesting, and I think maybe it's just a byproduct of my time at the Group of Five, covering Group of Five schools and seeing, you know, the fact that, listen, let's call it what it is. You know, a lot of G5 players, the ones who excel, end up getting, you know, plucked by P5 programs. And I've seen it from the Group of Five perspective in the sense of, you know, I had, you know, Tyson Helton, of course, is Kenny Baker's former boss. He was one of the first Group of Five coaches who said to me, listen, there are people at this level who, you know, old timers, he wouldn't mention any names, we're going to hate it. And then you have some guys like me who are going to say, I kind of like the idea of turning over my roster every year. You got to look at it like an NFL type of offseason. What I'm getting at here, Chip, is has Texas always, in your experience, kind of been ahead of the curb or at least on par in terms of, listen, you know, the Lone Star State's an excellent place to recruit, right? And you know, I'm sure Jeff Howe and others will talk about maybe some of the ebbs and flows of recruiting under Mack Brown and others. But I'm just genuinely curious because this seems, especially in this era, Chip, the NIL era, the transfer portal era, it's not just, hey, we got one or two guys. It's what you just mentioned. It's, you know, Taylor Searles and Kendall Perry and Brandon Harris and an entire staff, right? So I guess it's a genuine inquiry on my part. As in your time covering the program, has Texas always kind of been ahead of the curve in that part or in that regard, or does this feel kind of new?
No, this is new, and in large part because the transfer portal arrived in 2018, and Steve Sarkisian has been a big time player and winner, in my opinion, in the portal sweepstakes from year to year. When you look at, you know, Quinn Ewers came in the portal, and now you're adding all the players we just mentioned. Adonai Mitchell last year. I don't know if a single player made a bigger difference. I'm sure, you know, Florida State would say Keon Coleman coming in from Michigan State. But you have to be aligned, again, because you're working with your NIL collective. You're trying to make sure the money's right when you're trying to bring in players from other schools. You've got to, you know, get NIL money for your returning guys who've had a big year. It's got to be a well-oiled machine, and that's what's to me, been so impressive for Texas because they just, you know, obviously there were some cracks in the defensive line situation with Bo Davis. The timing of his departure, you know, looked like Texas was in good position with Jamari Caldwell from Houston, who was attracted to playing for Bo Davis, and then Bo Davis leaves for LSU and Jamari Caldwell signs with Oregon. That would have been a nice pickup, but they get Tia Savea. And as we've talked about here on the Flagship Podcast, Johnny Nansen is the Poly Whisperer, you know, a top recruiter in the Polynesian community. We know the Polynesian community turns out, you know, five-star talent. And even if they're not five-star, they, you know, they're just, it's a healthy, vibrant recruiting base to be tapped into, because you look in the draft every year, you're seeing Polynesian players in the first round at every position. So, you know, that was a good pickup. I think, I mean, you wrote about it today, Tia Savea, yeah. His PFF run defense grades better than Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton, the two returning defensive tackles for Texas. Now, you got to have the run stuffer, because Alfred Collins is a good pass rusher. So if he's going to kind of play the role of Byron Murphy, Tia Savea and Vernon Broughton play the role of Tavondre Sweat. And I'm not here to say that those guys are going to be easy to replace, because Byron Murphy is reminding people a lot of Aaron Donald. And you're seeing him rise up these mock draft boards. I don't think he falls below 15, Eric, and he could go higher, because as he works out, as he goes to the combine and they see this chiseled 6'1", 308-pound frame, which is virtually a carbon copy of Aaron Donald's measurables, and they see his explosiveness, his hands, the way he, you know, coordinates his hands and his feet, I think Byron Murphy is a 10-year player in the NFL draft. And, you know, Tavondre Sweat not weighing in at the Senior Bowl, you know, we talked about his weight at the Sugar Bowl and he said, yeah, you know, I got to drop a few pounds. He's got till February 29th until he gets to the combine, because the NFL is concerned about it. You know, he's listed 362. Is he heavier than that? Is that why he didn't want to weigh in at the Senior Bowl? Look, if he works out well, and he did at the Senior Bowl, he held his point of attack, and I think he came away impressing everyone with his ability to hold the point of attack, and no one ran at him in the Senior Bowl. So, but those two guys, replacing those two guys, not going to be easy. It's really huge. You and I've talked about the decision of Alfred Collins to come back, because he and Vernon Broughton know that what the standard is. They know what Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, the kind of work that they put in, and they know, they should know what it's going to take for them to have a similar step up going into this 2024 season.
Yeah, Chip. And like I said, apologies for throwing that curveball at you. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. And in terms of, you know, what I wrote about today with the defensive line room and specifically defensive tackle, I think you touched on a lot of the things there. So I'll kind of just, you know, kind of round it off. And maybe it's a good segue as we get into winter conditioning and why it's going to be so important here is, in my mind, and we've talked about it here on the podcast, I won't go too long. It's going to be a tall ask to expect Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton to be Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy. It's not that they will not have their own level of development and growth as they are assumed to, you know, be the starters next year. But it's one thing to be a starter. It's another thing to be the top two defensive tackles in the nation, right? So why is a Tia Savea so important? Why is in the winter getting an Alex January here on campus now so important? Melvin Hills will be here over the summer. Let's try to build as much depth as possible. And this is a big time, a very important time for guys like Zach Swanson and Aaron Bryant, Sadir Mitchell, Dre Bledsoe, right? Because it's going to take more than Alfred Collins, Vernon Broughton to just step in and have that level of defensive line, defensive tackle success you had last year. You got to have that depth that at least fills the gaps, right? So maybe you don't have two first round picks in the 2025 NFL draft. But maybe you have an Alfred Collins who rises and a Vernon Broughton who's solid. And then you have three or four guys, because remember, Texas did play, five defensive tackles played over 250 snaps last year. So you know you need at least five, right? You feel comfortable that you have three. Who are those other two? And can they be better than Trill Carter was last year? Trill, it's almost hard to measure Trill's impact because, again, a lot of the time he saw was, in non-leverage situations and kind of situationally, right? But can you get someone who can be a little more impactful than Trill? Can you have some guys who can be more impactful than some of those guys with the end of the rotation defensive tackle players? So that is key, and that starts from now in winter conditioning. And Sark, when I asked him about it, said, he felt it'd be a little unfair to assess where those guys are at in their development this early in the game, which, of course, is a fair answer. But with that being said, he feels confident that this group is going to be another strength of the team in 2024.
Yeah, and Kenny Baker coming in as the new defensive. And let's be honest, Pete Kwiatkowski coaches the defensive ends. And Bo Davis, even though he was called the defensive line coach, he coached the interior defensive lineman. Kenny Baker will coach the interior defensive lineman. And we've talked about it. Those are the Willy Wonka golden ticket guys. I mean, you have to have them if you want to compete for a championship. And that's why Kenny Baker's hire was so important. And Steve Sarkisian, looked high and low and talked to Mike McDaniel, the Miami Dolphins, and got a good report on Kenny Baker. But we're going to be watching Kenny Baker as much as we're going to be watching the development of the players, because that's a huge, huge position. I mean, it's almost as important as the defensive coordinator, because you have to have those guys in the middle who can stop the run, who can set the tone for your defense, and go recruit those guys, because Texas lost DeAndre Robinson from this signing class because of the Bo Davis defection to LSU. So look, they're in a position right now where they've got good returning talent, and they've got to keep building with the players you just mentioned. The Jare Bledsoe, Sadir Mitchell, Zach Swanson, Aaron Bryant. And those guys have gotten some reps. Now they're going to step up and get more reps if they earn them. And Baron Sorrell, even though he's, an edge player, and Ethan Burke, those guys are huge too in the ability to stop the run, and all the success that run defense, top three in the nation last year, had. And Texas was one of the top, teams in quarterback pressures again for the second season in a row. So that's the standard. And you got guys who know it, who are part of it. And now we'll see if they can carry it on under the leadership of Kenny Baker. But you mentioned it, winter conditioning is underway. We now know that spring football will start on March 19th. And so Sarkisian's going to give his players spring break. Usually he has part of spring football before spring break and then finishes it after. He's going to do it all after spring break. So they will practice, he said, for 5 weeks, 3 days a week, and the spring game will be on April 20th. So it'll be a compressed spring football for Texas. But winter conditioning rolls on, and I kind of hinted in the insider last week, early in winter conditioning, it's kind of about the speed guys who because the big guys don't flash as much. There's not pads. They can flash in the weight room, but we'll get to those numbers a little later in winter conditioning. But the speed guys are flashing, and really positive reports about the speed of Isaiah Bond, Aaron Butler. Sources telling me that Aaron Butler's speed is real. He's a 10 flat 100 guy. Isaiah Bond appears to be a 10 flat 100 guy. When you're replacing a guy like Xavier Worthy, you got to have that speed. Silas Bolden is not on campus yet. He'll get here in the summer. But Ryan Wingo was told he's what they thought he was, crazy long, crazy athletic, crazy fast. And the defensive back who was getting the most praise, Eric, was Xavier Filsimi, early enrollee freshman who is fighting for a safety spot with Andrew Makuba and Derek Williams. That's encouraging because there's been a lot of changeover at that safety position.
Chip, two things I'll hit on. I was going to start with receivers, but now I'll work in reverse. You say fighting for a safety spot and no disagreement there, but listen, if Steve Sarkisian and company are going to play 4 and 5 safeties like they did last year, well, let's have 3, 4, 5 safeties who are like really, really good, right? So you cannot be discouraged at all if you're getting the report that, you know, Xavier Filsimi is hitting the ground running, because as you mentioned, you got Andrew Makuba coming in from Clemson, going to come back to him in a second. Of course, you got Derek Williams Jr., who was really arguably the most well-rounded safety of the group of the team last year. In terms of Makuba, something I thought was interesting, Chip, was Sark said to us that you don't get a guy like him who's been, you know, more or less a 3-year starter at Clemson, who makes a decision to leave that program, come back home to Austin. Of course, that plays a huge factor, unless his mindset, his frame of mind is, I'm coming here ready to make an impact, and then it's on to the next thing, right? And that just reminds me a lot of an AD Mitchell in my mind, in terms of the frame of mind of, hey, I'm coming here, I'm ready to make my impact, and, you know, I'm on to, you know, the next level, right? So that, in my mind, has to be an encouraging sign for Texas fans. So just starting there, yeah, if you're going to play multiple safeties, and again, we'll see, you know, Chip, that's something that will be really interesting. That's going to be something I'm going to keep my eye on throughout the offseason. You know, was that safety rotation a byproduct of not feeling like you had 1 or 2 standouts? Or was that just, all right, we really want to get multiple guys on the field? We shall see. But
yeah, it felt like
go for it, Chip.
Well, it felt like they had safeties who were good at one thing and not another. They didn't have the complete guy. I think Derek Williams was more of the complete guy. And look, Michael Taff ended up basically kind of chasing off Jalen Catalan because Taff developed, at least in the mind of safeties coach Blake Gideon. And I think, you know, there's more for him to develop. But that was a position that was seen as a weakness. And you're right, Eric, we don't know like what was holding that position back, because there were games where one player would be excellent and the next not so much, and teams went after the safeties of the Texas Longhorns, and that needs to change. And, you know, it seems like it's been a long time since the likes of Earl Thomas and Michael Griffin, guys who went on to multi Pro Bowls in the NFL, were playing safety for Texas. So this is that's one of the positions, along with defensive tackle, along with just the sheer competition at receiver and corner. Although my man Malik Muhammad, I'm on that train as he is a star and he will be the walk-in, and he's only walking in because he earned it, boundary corner for Texas next year. But that's what you want. You want competition. You want guys absolutely having to fight to earn the starting job and then keep the starting job. And it sounds like that, at least early in winter conditioning, you're getting some favorable reports about the receivers, the defensive backs. And so as far as where they're going to be practicing, we did have a little nugget in the Insider last week that the indoor practice facility, the new indoor practice facility that will be just south of DKR, actually just south of the student rec center where the School of Social Work has been forever. They will be tearing that School of Social Work down and cleaning up that site, getting it ready for construction to start in the summer with a completion date of April of 2025. So from summer on, you'll see that new indoor practice facility, and it'll have a full outdoor football field, a full indoor football field. And underneath it all, this is one of the coolest perks, I think, for these student athletes. There will be a parking garage for all 500 of UT's student athletes so that they don't have to be part of the hunting license for a parking spot on campus. Ajayi Hall, God bless him, wherever he is, who lost
his mind. Pride of Valrico, Florida. That's what 813, baby. Continue.
Oh, man. Poor guy got his car booted and he's all pissed off. There will be no more boots as long as you have your parking garage key card when that new practice facility comes online. And also, I was told that natural grass will be back in DKR for the 2026 season. So for those of you who are, you know, naturalists about your grass fields, over the field turf and the rubber pellets, there you go.
Listen, Chip, you know, all jokes aside, the parking thing is certainly a nice addition, because, I mean, let's call a spade. UT is a big campus and not a lot of parking. No. I can certainly attest, as someone who just was given a parking ticket today, despite having a valid parking pass, I will take that gripe up with UT parking services offline. No, I mean, listen, when you're dealing with 18 to 23, 24 year olds, you want to make things as easy for them as possible, direct from them as possible. So that is certainly a nice addition. And just overall, I mean, you know, you've obviously been around here much longer than I have, but the condition of the current practice facility, current practice fields, not that it's, you know, poor or anything like that, but Chip, you know the game. This is Power Five football. You got to keep up with the whoever you want to insert, right? So that is certainly a much needed addition.
That's right. That's right. All right. So football cruising along with the winter conditioning, and again, spring football will begin March 19th, and the spring game April 20th. Eric, the Texas men's basketball team finishes a school record, six straight games against ranked opponents, with a 3-3 record. It's weird. They have won three games on the road in the Big 12, and yet they're 1-4 at home in Big 12 play, including Tuesday night's loss to Iowa State. Texas lost that game 70-65, and it wasn't close at all until the final 8 minutes or so of this game, when Dylan DeZue went Superman and scored 17 points and was just phenomenal and helped Texas cut the lead to 3. But unfortunate turnover from Tyrese Hunter with 2 minutes and 6 seconds left turns into a 3-pointer by Iowa State's Tamin Lipsey, and that kind of stretched that lead back out to where Texas never could get. Now, listen, that comeback was fantastic, because you and I were sitting there watching this thing, and Iowa State was putting on a defensive clinic with their length and their defense against Max Asmus and Tyrese Hunter, who were both 0-for in the first half. And Tyrese Hunter finished the game 0-for, Eric. 0-of-8, 0 points against his former team. And I kind of want to ask you, Kendall Weaver, who was flying around, had 5 offensive rebounds in the second half, gets taken out of the game with 3 minutes and 37 seconds left, and doesn't come back in until there's, I think, 15 seconds left. Are we at a point now with how Tyrese Hunter is struggling especially late in games. He had the bad late turnover against Houston, where you got to go with Max Asemus, Kendall Weaver, and Dillon Mitchell, and Dylan DeZoo, Brock Cunningham, or whoever, you know, Caden Shedrick, whoever's more productive. I don't know, because Tyrese Hunter's such a good player, but I don't know what's going on with him.
First, I'm going to give you a direct answer. I think the answer to that is no, only because I just don't think that Kendall Weaver's offensive game, it's situational, right? If you're looking to close out a game, sure. But when you're down a couple points, you need consistent offense. Here's why it's tough. Because whenever Kendall Weaver's on the floor, inevitably he makes good things happen. He had back-to-back, he had about the 5 offensive rebounds, back-to-back offensive rebounds in one stretch. This kid attacks the rim with reckless abandon. I know I made the joke to you that, you know, like, or maybe it was Joe Cook, I don't remember, but he thinks he's Vince Carter when he just, you know, attacks the rim and his elevator is going to go up, then it just stops. You know, he doesn't quite get over guys when he attacks the rim. But the reason I say no is, again, I don't think his offensive game is consistent enough. But Chip, this is the big picture for me as someone who's covered this team the entire year. Chip, Rodney Terry, and I'm not necessarily putting it on him, 100% on him, but I just think it's the byproduct of where they are in the year. This roster is not deep enough, Chip, for them to keep abandoning ship on guys. Because guess what? IT Horton, that's a guy you brought in to be part of this rotation. Played 3 minutes against TCU. I think he had some like 10, 11 minutes last night. Zarek Onyema is in the witness protection program, right? So now we got two guys who, in theory, were going to be rotational pieces. You can't, we don't have enough room to go to another one, right? And all of a sudden, hey, we got to depend on Kendall Weaver, right? So I think it's a byproduct of those two answers, Chip, why I say no. With Tyrese, I don't want to, you know, downplay the fact that I'm probably going to sound like Rodney Terry here. Tamin Lipsey, Keyshawn Gilbert, you're talking about the third rated in terms of defensive rating, third rated defensive player in the Big 12 and the seventh rated defensive player in the Big 12. Two big time guards. Chip, did you notice this? Because this really impressed me with Lipsey. We weren't talking about someone who was going old school Duke, slapping the floor, picking guys up from, you know, three quarter court. That dude was just backing into his defensive stance and saying, all right, come initiate against me. and the guards couldn't do anything. You know, obviously Max Asemus was able to get his first points. I want to say it was just after the 15-minute mark from the free throw line, knocked down three free throws. But there was a point in this game when Texas's guards were 0-11. And like I said, those guards weren't, you know, trapping him. And they just said, hey, come on, run your offense. We got something for that. So I think that plays a big part in Tyrese Hunter's struggles, at least last night. But no, I mean, you raise an interesting point. I just don't think we're there yet because they're just not – you're running out of guys to go through. In my opinion, Chip.
Yeah. 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 This Texas team is flawed, but I love the effort and my gosh, the closing performances we've seen from Max Asemus, who breaks a tie against TCU on the road by scoring all 13 points in a 13-2 run to close the game. And then last night, Dylan DeZoo, 17 points in the final 8 minutes to help Texas cut it to 3. And, you know, Rodney Terry after the game was like, you know, reminded that he's won 3 on the road and lost 4 at home. And he, you know, sort of pleaded with Texas fans, hey, keep coming. We're going to get this thing figured out, hopefully, because they're playing West Virginia Saturday, 2:00, I think. And West Virginia is a team who's on the bottom end of the conference, but is a team that beat Texas earlier this year in Morgantown. So, you know, Texas has got to figure this thing out. Obviously, they're going to look back and say woulda, coulda, shoulda against Central Florida, a team they were leading, you know, by 15 in the second half and lost. And the Houston game, they played brilliantly in the second half. We're up 4 with 2 minutes left and couldn't close it out. And then you know, last night, that would have been a steal of a victory. Texas had no business winning that game because they were outplayed for, what, 32 minutes, and then they got it going. And again, credit to Dylan DeZoo, even Max Asemus, who was, you know, he got to the foul line. He hit 7 of 7 free throws, even though he was 3 of 11. He ends up with 13 points. And we mentioned that he was over in the first half. So Iowa State, you're right. Their defense, they are so long, and they are so it's all five of their players are bought into that defense. They're all long. They're a problem. Whoever gets them in the NCAA tournament, good luck.
But, Chip, really quick, just I know we're not a take it or leave it just yet, but I just want to run a quick take it or leave it esque question by you. If this team doesn't make the NCAA tournament, they will look back at the West Virginia loss early, and more specifically the UCF loss, and say that's the reason why.
Yes. And I'll, you know, bang my Kendall Weaver drum that
he
helped set the tone for them defensively. And now look, that was a really good game, tough game. That's not a terrible loss against Iowa State, who's going to, you know, they're the number 14 team in the country for a reason, but they cannot afford to lose any of their remaining home games because they're all games that Texas is expected to win. And, you know, they may be able to survive and get into the NCAA tournament just winning their remaining games against West Virginia and Kansas State and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. But you're right. There's no guarantee. I mean, I talked to Jerry Palm last week, and he had him as last four in, and then he took him out of the tournament. And then after they beat TCU, he put him in as an 8 seed. And here's the thing to watch, Eric. If Texas stays on that 8 line and Ole Miss keeps coming,
oh boy,
don't be surprised to see a Texas Ole Miss 8-9 line in the NCAA tournament, because we know the committee loves to create storylines and blah blah blah. I know.
Yeah, you said it.
I know. We'll move on. The Texas women had a great week. They went to Baylor and won, and then they came home and handled business against then number 2 ranked Kansas State. Kansas State without their 6'6" All-American Ioka Lee, but Texas without their All Big 12 point guard Rory Harmon. So they will probably meet again in the Big 12 tournament if things go the way that it appears. But listen, that was a really good defensive game for Texas. It was, you know, kind of those are two good defensive teams. K-State has a bunch of 6-foot guards who make life difficult. That's one of the first times we saw Madison Booker matched up against players at her position, at her size, and she struggled with turnovers, and they made K-State struggle with turnovers. So that, I thought that was a really well defended game. The Texas women then got this week off, which is nice. They got a weekend. You get one of these per year, and for Texas, it comes at a good time with Madison Booker coming off the hamstring injury and Deanna Gaston coming back from the ankle injury. But Eric, they'll go to TCU Saturday at 4, and TCU is 2-8 in Big 12 play. Should be a good win for the Texas women.
Yeah, Chip. I'll just quickly piggyback off of what you mentioned with Kansas State, as you talked about Ioka Lee not available. Definitely looking forward to seeing that matchup again. Also, kind of very similar if you flip Texas men, you know, to making the push last night to come back late. K-State, Chip, made a late push, and that's why they're the number 2 ranked team in the nation. It's funny. I'll share a quick story with you. I rode the elevator at Moody Center. I guess for our listeners who don't know, there's kind of only one way in and one way out. You know, if you work or participating at Moody Center, take the elevator from Portal 12 downstairs. And, you know, I was there with Aaliyah Moore, who let out a big sigh as she got on the elevator to leave Moody Center, because you knew it's like if that game were, you know, 5 or 6 more minutes, it might have gotten a little more interesting. But no, give credit to the Texas women. As you mentioned, they got a nice little break off. I think it'll help with some of the injury situation they have there. And you talk about Madison Booker. She was asked post game, you know, who was the Madison Booker in the first half and who was that Madison Booker in the second half? She's like, I don't know who that was in the first half, but in the second half, she came alive. So good win for the Texas women. And I definitely think that's a matchup that we'll see again in Kansas City.
Yeah. The Aaliyah Moore, she is such a key to this whole operation because she's got the physical presence and the athletic ability down low to really cause problems as a defender, as a bucket getter. She had 15 points and 10 rebounds in that K-State game, and they were huge because Shaylee Gonzalez has been struggling with her shot. She was 1 of 7 in that game against K-State, and they need to get her going. She's a shooter. She's come through in big situations. She's had to handle the point a little bit when Madison Booker's hamstring flared up and they had to play Cincinnati without Booker. So she's had to do a lot this season, but I think Vic likes where his team is right now, and they're doing this again. So they're number 7 in the country. All right, Eric, you ready for some take it or leave it?
Absolutely, sir.
Let's do it. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, and if you're watching us on the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel, we will roll on with some take it or leave it. Eric, I am asking you for take it or leave it number 1. Jaden Blue, rising junior running back for the Texas Longhorns, will have the most carries for Texas in 2024. Take it or leave it.
Coming hot, Chip Brown, right out the gate. I love that one. I am
way too early forecast. We love these, right?
No doubt about it. I'm going to leave it, although I was very tempted to take it because, listen, CJ Baxter has yet to show that he can stay healthy for a full season. Of course, only his freshman year, right? So we'll see what happened. He was a guy who didn't particularly struggle with injuries as a prep player, but he shared carries for a lot of his prep career up until his senior year down there in Central Florida, Edgewater High School. But listen, there's one thing we know about Steve Sarkisian. He really loves C.J. Baxter. Guy got the running back one job coming out of camp, and for all intents and purposes, you know, even when he had some struggles with the injuries and early on, it wasn't until more or less Jonathan Brooks was like, hey, you know, it was very abundantly clear that was the hot hand he needed to ride when JB became the number one back. So we know that Steve certainly likes C.J. Baxter. There's a lot to like about C.J. in my mind. So I am going to leave it. But listen, I'm so it wouldn't be shocking if we're revisiting this come next year. What about you, CB?
All right, so at the Sugar Bowl media day, Tashard Choice told me his comp for Jaden Blue would be Jahmyr Gibbs. You know, I'm a Lions fan, and when I heard that, because that's not Tashard Choice just riffing, he recruited Jahmyr Gibbs to Georgia Tech and coached him before Gibbs transferred to Alabama. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh my, okay. So I'm going to take this. Now, Jaden Blue's got to hang out of the football. I think he had 79 touches in 2023 and two fumbles. That's, you know, a fumble every 40 touches. That's not going to work. So he's got to secure the football. He and C.J. Baxter both had big fumbles in the Sugar Bowl that impacted that game. But his speed, his ability to, you know, get into space, catch the football, make plays, I think we're just scratching the surface with Jaden Blue. So I'm going to take this. Maybe I'm a prisoner of the moment with Tashard Choice comparing Jaden Blue to Jahmyr Gibbs and Jahmyr Gibbs just going to his first Pro Bowl as a rookie with the Lions, but I'm going to take that one. All right, take it or leave it. Number two,
Texas should be considered a top three team in the SEC heading into the 2024 campaign. Chip Brown, take it or leave it.
I mean, compared to where Texas was, two short years ago, 5-7, and everyone in Longhorn Nation wondering, oh my God, we're going to get slaughtered in the SEC. And then all of a sudden, Texas is in the college football playoff, the last college football playoff with only four teams. Yes, Texas is not only should they, I mean, they will be considered a top three team in the SEC heading into 2024. I think because of the Nick Saban retirement, Alabama, we have to wait and see how they adjust under Kalen DeBoer. LSU loses Heisman Trophy winner Jaden Daniels. Georgia, obviously, with Carson Beck coming back and all the depth of recruiting that Kirby Smart has done, Georgia's going to be number one. But it would not shock me. Ole Miss is really kind of the other program in my mind that could get some serious top three consideration because of all the transfer portal movement that they've had. But I'm going to take this, Eric. And I know for Longhorn fans, they're like, wow, we're already a top three team in the SEC. You got to prove it on the field. But yeah, I think there's going to be those expectations. How about you?
Here's the list of teams in my mind who should be considered over Texas for top three in the SEC. Number one, Georgia. Number two, that's it. I'm taking it. Of course they should. No disrespect to Alabama, but Nick Saban ain't walking through that door. It was just announced, shortly before we started taping this, he'll be joining the College Game Day crew. Can't wait to see that.
Surprise, surprise. He did all those appearances on the Pat McAfee show this year because he wanted to see if he could develop some chemistry with his future game day desk mate.
You took the words right out of my mouth. So that's where Nick Saban will be. He ain't walking through that door. And listen, I think Kalen DeBoer is a hell of a football coach, and I really like it. You know, he just added William Inge, who, of course, was a defensive coordinator at Washington, just added to that staff. So I think Kalen is going to be able to do some things there, but that's a wait and see. That's not what I see here with Texas. That's not me living here in the moment in Austin. That is just a fact in my mind. So Georgia, that's it. So I'm taking it, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. Quinn Ewers coming back is huge in that, no doubt. Okay. So I am asking you, Eric, Texas basketball should be happy going 3-3 against the 6 straight top 25 opponents they just played. If you need a recap, it was Texas took on Baylor. They won that game. They went to Oklahoma, who was then number 11. Texas won that game. They went to BYU, who was number 21 at that time. They got smoked in the second half of that game and lost. And then they had the overtime heartbreaker against number 4 Houston at the Moody Center, and then went to TCU and won last Saturday and lost to Iowa State at home Tuesday night. They should be happy going 3-3 in that stretch. Eric, take it or leave it.
I had to remove myself from last night, remove myself from the thoughts of the Houston game. I'm going to say yes, Chip. When they lost the UCF game, and I wrote the piece that I said, Texas doesn't have a horns down problem. They have a win problem. They had lost to Iowa State. They lost to Texas Tech. Sorry. They lost last night. I say last night. They had lost to Texas Tech, a game that they were leading in. And it's like, all right, you drop that one, then, and you know, they go and squeak out a win at Cincy, right? They lose at West Virginia, a bad loss. And they lose to UCF. And it's like, this could get ugly, Chip, because they had 6 straight AP top 25 opponents that were going to play. And I was even of the thought that if they can just get 2, that it's all right. We've kind of righted the ship a little bit. It was hard to find the 2 at that point in time, but I was thinking if they can just get 2. The fact that they've gotten 3, yes, you do have to be happy about it. You can still be disappointed at the fact that you didn't play your best basketball against Iowa State. You didn't play your best basketball in other moments. You had a chance against Houston to upset the number 4 team in the nation, right? But all things considered, I think, yes, they should be happy, because at least now they are in position to where if this team, Chip, truly is bonded by these last 6 games, and we've seen them rise to the occasion in certain moments, then they should know what it takes to close out the rest of this Big 12 slate and, quite frankly, pick up wins that are much needed if they're going to be a tournament team. So the answer is yes.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to take this because, as you said, this team was on the brink of who knows going where. After the losses to West Virginia and Central Florida, it looked like this team had no identity. You knew that Max Asmus and Dylan DeZue were 2 players you could count on. But after that, it was head scratching. And since then, and I wrote about this this past week, that Kendall Weaver over the last 5 games, his minutes have doubled from 13. He was averaging 13.4 through 17 games. And then the last 5, it's been 26.2 minutes per game. And he's had a good impact. The defense played in the win at Oklahoma. The defense played in the win at TCU. Those were nice wins on the road. And it's weird. And look, the 1-4 record in Big 12 play at home is head scratching because Rodney Terry didn't have a feel for his lineup yet. And that's what led to the loss to West Virginia in Central Florida. And those were, West Virginia was on the road Central Florida. They should have won both of those games. They didn't, but we're talking about the stretch of six games against the ranked opponents. And I think going 3-3, Texas has helped themselves because, as we mentioned, Jerry Palm had Texas out of the field of 68. And then after the win at TCU, he put him in as an 8 seed. So this, I think this stretch has been beneficial to Texas. I think they have a better idea of who they are defensively. They certainly need other players to step up and help Max Asemus and Dylan DeZoo, because they've got a lot of tough games remaining, Eric. And as we've mentioned, the depth is not there. And so there are other guys. I don't know what it's going to take for them to get some more minutes, but you worry maybe Max Asemus is tireless. Maybe Dylan DeZoo is tireless, but this was a lot. And so I think 3-3, you take it.
There you go.
All right. There it is, kids. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Flagship Podcast. Make sure that you like and subscribe to the Horns 24/7 YouTube channel. If you're listening to us on podcast, feel free to give us a 5-star review. You know, it helps with the bosses, all that good stuff. For Eric Henry, I am Chip Brown. Until next time, we'll see you over at horns247.com. Stay safe and keep the faith.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.